This is Dos Pequeños.
A funnier look at the paranormal in New Mexico, the world, and beyond.
With your co-hosts, Eric Carter-Londin.
And Alex.
Welcome to Spooky Sheet.
Hi.
Hi. What are you doing?
Getting ready to read you a story.
Okay, let me get my blanket.
Okay.
And my pillow.
And your little pillow.
My pillow.
Make memes.
And get tucked in.
You can get on the couch and...
And chill?
Yeah.
No, I have to bring the mic over there. It's fine.
So I got a story for today.
Okay.
I haven't read it yet, so it's going to be just freestyle.
It's going to be as much of a surprise for you as it is for us.
That's right, because
that's how Alex does things.
That's right. Just fucking wing it.
Okay, I'm ready.
So hopefully like the last episode that you did, like, comment, subscribe, all that fun shit.
Yeah, Patreon, Patreon. Copy.
Still Dos Pequeños. It is an under spooky
sheet.
Everything's
Dos Pequeños.
Yeah. So, you know.
The end.
This is a story called Just a Minor Offense.
This is a story
of a lovely lady.
How my life got straight turned upside down.
Oh, no. But it's by John F. Sutter.
What's it called?
Just a Minor Offense.
Oh.
Okay, you ready? They must have come up with their lights cut off because I didn't know they were there until one of them shone his flash right behind me and said, "All right. What seems to be the trouble?" He caught me standing there like a knucklehead, with a spring leaf in my hand, staring at the coin spilling out of the payphone. There was silver all over the floor of the booth and the shelf under the phone. A coin or two hung pinched in the twisted metal. I didn't turn around. I figured the flashlight would be right in my eyes, and I didn't want things to be worse than they were going to be. I just stood still, watching his big arm go up and his big hand tighten the light bulb overhead. He crowded into the phone booth, ramming me against the wall while he shut the door. The light came on. He grunted as though he'd seen what he'd expected to see. "Jackpot, huh? All right, kid, let's get outside and talk a little."
Ooh.
He opened the door, and the light went out. I started to turn, and when his flash came on again, "Hold it. Don't move or do a thing." He raised his voice. "Andy, take that hamburger out of the bag and bring the bag over here." In a few seconds, I heard the car door slam and the other cop came up. The one who was keeping me pinned said to his buddy, "Thanks, Junior. Here, he's got to clean up his mess for the phone company." He spoke to me.
"Okay.
Turn around. Okay. Now hand me over the hunk of steel. Lay it here." A big hand came out in front of me and a handkerchief spread across the palm. I laid the spring leaf on the handkerchief. My prints would be on the metal. They sure had me on cold. "Look," I said. "I didn't do this. I just came in to phone." And, "Sure," he said.
Okay, so I'm guessing somebody beat up the phone booth?
I think he was, like, breaking into it to get the coinage out.
Oh, okay.
"Sure," he said. His outline was big and bulky against the streetlight. "They never do. Not even when you catch them red-handed."
Bum, bum, bum.
"If you'll listen a minute, the only thing I'll listen to is that money jingling in the bag. Get to it."
"My money don't jiggle jiggle."
"Oh God,
it
no."
Folds.
That's too much of that fucking song.
"I like it when you wiggle wiggle." "Faux show."
"I'd always been told you don't argue with cops. And there was two of them, one of them bigger than I am. And I closed up and began scooping up the nickels, dimes, and quarters. And I took care not to miss any. Not even a dime in the far corner. Not even the stuff still hanging in the coin box itself. Finally, I straightened and turned." See, maybe some of our listeners don't realize that there used to be these things called payphones.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to put money in them to make phone calls.
Yeah, 25 cents. And, well, it used to be like 10 cents. And then it was 15 cents.
Yeah, and then 25.
And then 35.
Was it 35?
I think it went up to 50 at one point.
And then they said cell phones.
Yeah, and then cell phones happened. But yeah. Like, what?
You used to have to remember numbers.
Yeah. And how much money could have actually been in those?
I mean,
a couple $100 maybe?
Enough
Max?
For somebody that needs it.
Yeah, fair.
Pay for everything with dimes.
Get a dollar burger from the dollar menu.
Right. Finally, I straightened and turned around, passing over the bag. "All right, officer," I said, as evenly as I could. "I've done what you wanted me to do. If you'll listen a minute, I'll tell you something that'll prove that I didn't do it. You trying to tell me I didn't see what I saw?" The other cop, the one called Andy, cut in. His tone was a little quieter. "Let's give him a minute, Mike. It looks like we've been coming in with all the angles accounted for. We don't want something flying up and hitting us in the face later. The big one was quiet for a second. Okay, he finally said. Let's hear it. It's this way, I said, trying to keep the relief out of my voice. I've been out there with three other guys, and I'll give you their names later. But he was a quick snitch on that shit.
I mean, he's just like ready to throw everyone under the bus.
I'll tell you their names and everything. I'd just taken the last one home, and I started across the park when the car pooped out on me right around the bend up there. It's my dad's car. I can't get it started. Acts like there's dirt in the needle valve, whatever that is.
This guy's full of shit.
He's just making random shit up. And the oranges and the tires weren't working. You know what happens if you leave a car on the street, especially in the park. It gets hauled in, and it costs you to bail it out. So I thought it'd be better to phone Dad and then call Brown's Garage. And you didn't have any change, so you thought you'd just help yourself to some. This Andy cut in again. If he'd done that, it might knock out the phone. Mike, let him finish. I went on. When I came inside of the booth, I thought I saw someone step out and disappear, but I wasn't sure. And when I got here, it was the way you saw it. The spring leaf was on the shelf. Like Meathead, I picked it up. And then you came along, and that's it. Likely story.
I just don't feel like he's proving his case at all.
No, he should have thought of that. The other cop, it wouldn't hurt to check out this thing about the car. Only take a few minutes. Which way is it, kid? And I pointed over that way, half a block. It's a 57 Chevy. The big one took me by the arm. Let's go. I walked out to the cruiser with them, and they put me in the front beside Andy and the driver. Mike got in behind me, and as we came out from under the streetlight, I saw that he had a sort of blocky face, pitted here and there. His buddy was shorter, thinner, with sandy eyebrows and a sharp nose. It's a lot of description, isn't it? We were over by the Chevy almost before I got settled. I pulled up alongside, and Andy held out a hand, the keys. I gave them to him. To start it, I know, he said, slipping from behind the wheel. He went and turned the starter of the Chevy over two or three times, then got out and lifted the hood. He flashed his light at the motor for a minute, and then closed the hood and came back. It's like he says. He returned the keys.
Okay. All right.
I felt better. I was pretty sure that they'd check on me, but you can't count on dirt. Sometimes it works loose in a valve when you don't think it can. Mike cleared his throat. So, how does this let him off the hook? Andy drummed on the wheel. He'd never used that buggy for a getaway, the way it is. Incidentally, what's your name, kid? David Carey. Your father's name? Samuel E. Carey. Andy nodded. The registration was in that name. Let me see your driver's license. I handed it over, and he glanced at it and gave it back. It checks. Sure, I said. It's on the level, all the way. Look, I've given it to you straight. Why don't you let me go and then hunt for this other guy? I still have to call home, and I'd better phone the garage. Mike hefted the bag of money. How do we know you're not a Sergeant Jensen's file on a couple of counts already? I'm not. I've never been in trouble in my life, and I'm not wanting to start now. Andy said, I'm not out to make a rough for anybody, kid. Neither one of us is. But we'd be pretty poor cops if we didn't take you in. They probably won't do a thing, but they like to be the ones to make the decisions.
Okay. This sounds weird.
Right? Like, just for breaking, I don't know. Well, maybe they would arrest him.
Maybe.
But the car. Don't worry about the car. If you're clean, we'll see you don't get a bit for something you couldn't help. He moved the stick over to drive, and we took off. We were at the station in less than 10 minutes. They took me into a room with several straight back chairs around the walls, a worn hardwood floor, and a cop behind the desk who seemed to match the room. He had thin brown hair and a hatchet face.
What's a hatchet face? What's a hatchet face? Hold on, maybe sharp.
Maybe like sharp edges or something?
Maybe it's a face that's had a hatchet taken to it. A hatchet face means someone whose hatchet face has a thin, hard, and unpleasant face.
Obviously like a hatchet.
Right.
I found out that he was the night sergeant. Descroll. That's the name, I suppose. He stared at me, poker face, and pulled out some kind of form, and then started asking me questions. And when he got to my age, I said, 16. He looked at Mike. Then he said, better call his family and get him down here. What's he done? Well, looks like he smashed a payphone for the chicken feed. Here. Mike plunked it down the bag. Descroll's face didn't change a bit. They won't need a lawyer then. His old man will be enough. Mike picked up the phone. "What's the number, kid?" And I turned to Sergeant to scroll. "You're going to book me?" "It hasn't to go on record, son. They brought you in, and I haven't heard it all yet, but whatever comes in here, it goes down on the sheet." I didn't say anything, trying to figure a way to keep my name clean. Descrolle prodded me again. "If you didn't do it, I can't count against you. You're 16. We're not in the habit of blabbing all over town who the kids are and who come in here. Let's get on with this. There's enough thing to keep us more than busy." Andy, who was standing beside me, dropped a match into an ashtray on the desk. "What's going on?" "Some kind of fight started 5 minutes ago," Sergeant Descrolle said, "over near the Locust and Third. And some girl's family called in about the same time to say that their kid's overdue getting home, not with her friends, not in the hospital. Out parked somewhere, probably." And he looked at me. "Her name's Joyce Reynolds. Know her?" "Well, I know who she is." "She's a year ahead of me in school." "Who she go with?"
"Who she go steady with?"
"Who's her fella?"
"I hear she goes steady with Herb Blackwood." He looked at the notepad. "That one hasn't seen her," he says. Andy asked idly, "Any of these kid gangs breaking and entering tonight?" "No reports. Well, back to business." He looked at Andy and then at Mike. "Tell me about this one." "In about half an hour, Dad came down. He didn't storm in, like some of the old boys you see on TV. And he didn't come in, hat in hand, to let them walk all over him. He just looked at me and then led to school. The other two had gone back to work and said, the officer who called said Dave was caught breaking into my payphone." The sergeant tapped the paper with his pen. "That's the way it looks, Mr. Carey. There's some business about your car that might be in his favor. What do you want us to do?" "Us? We'll turn this report over to Sergeant Jensen of Juvenile and let him check it out. Right now, we'll release the boy in your custody. I suggest you come back here tomorrow to talk to Sergeant Jensen. He'll be here. What time?" Descrolle considered. It'll take a little time. No sense in making him miss school. Say about 4 o'clock. He'll be here at 4. Shall I come too?" "As you like." Jensen didn't chew him up and spit him out into little pieces. Sometimes it works out better when the kid's alone. Why not leave it to him? Wow, this must be old story, because they would never have an underage kid at a being questioned.
Yeah, no, not without a parent present.
No, that's pretty
illegal. It's illegal. It's very illegal, yeah.
"All right." Dad turned and looked at me. "Well, you don't seem to be worse for the wear. But your mother's liable to say something about the dirt on your knees. How'd that happen?" I brushed up my pants, and it didn't brush off too well. "I guess that guy kneeling in the booth picking up that money." Descrolle had a faint frown on his face, and his voice had a slight rasp. He wasn't roughed up, if that's what you're getting at. He made a note on paper in front of him. Dad seemed pretty average sometimes, but he wasn't so average just then. His eyes glinted, and I almost thought his hair bristled. "Nobody will bring it up, if not necessary, but somebody will drag it out into the open, if necessary." He turned back to me. "Now, let's hear about the car, so we can get it straightened that part out and go home." In the morning, school was about as usual. But toward the end of the lunch period, Jack Burton stopped me in the hall, and he halfway hung that head of his with the peroxide widow's peak, so that he was looking up. A habit of his. His eyes looked a little worried. "I'm glad you called me. Even if it was awful this morning, the cops talked to me the way you said they would." I kept up a front of confidence. "Better not scare my best witness. You told him straight about what time I left you, I hope. You live right by the park, and they'll be able to figure out without telling you the whole truth about the car and all." He stuck his thumbs in the corner of his pants pockets, because that's the cool thing to do.
That's how you know that he means business.
"That's right. Sure, we got to stick together. I know that look, Dave. When you let me out, did you see any sign of Joyce Reynolds?" "Joyce Reynolds? No. How come?" "Well, she lives in the second house from me, remember? She's missing. I heard them mention it last night. She was out with Tom Fisher. Mad at Herb Blackwood, I hear. And I had this date with Tom instead. Tom says he brought her home around 12:15, close to the time that you let me out. He didn't see her at the door. What a bird brain." "And he doesn't know whether she got in or not."
Oh, got in.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
In.
In. I don't know why I said that. "She didn't. So where'd she get to? The cops asked me. Did I see her?" I had to tell him no. "Well, I didn't either," I said. "I have enough to do. Trying to get from under this phone business. You'll stick with me?" He grinned quickly. "Beat the phony rap. I'll do what I can. Stick to the truth, that's all. Stick to the truth, kid." I went down alone to the police headquarters to see Sergeant Jensen at 4 o'clock, the time they'd set. Mom tried to get Dad to go along, but he thought it over and over and said that he'd learn to face things alone more often now. He'd check on Jensen and thought I was able to get a fair break. Jensen's office wasn't much more than a desk, three chairs, and a lot of filing cabinets. The sergeant was a short cop, looking something like French hot tone.
French toast?
French hot tone.
Oh, some French toast.
With a bit of gray in his hair. He seemed sort of good-natured, but when he looked at me with those hazel eyes of his, I felt he'd known me all my life and that he knew everything about me. He waved me to a chair beside his desk and sat looking at me without talking for a minute or two. Finally, he decided to open up. David Carey. I've never run into you before, Dave. It's not my fault that you have this time, Sergeant. I wonder how you mean that, he said quietly. This put me off balance a bit. This is so funny. They're like interrogating this kid about fucking coins.
Well, I feel like that was a federal.
I guess it is.
That was a felony, right? Like,
yeah,
messing up a phone booth.
Mm-hmm. A public phone? Destruction or of private property, something like that. This put me off balance a little, getting double meaning out of what I'd said, but I'd hardly opened my mouth. All I mean is, I've always tried to keep out of things that cause trouble. And here things have turned on me. And then I got pulled in for something I didn't do. There's a lot of kids breaking and entering these days who aren't getting pulled in. For all we know, you might be a member of a gang or after. You see? Jensen fingered some papers. I have a number of reports on you, Dave. Good reports. That's in your favor, of course. Why would he have good reports? He said with a little bit more bite in this tone. We had a kid in here about 3 months ago, just your age, what they called a model boy, and he decided to steal a car and did, but he was caught. I kept quiet. Because what would you say to that? That boy and those vandals haven't caught it. We haven't caught yet. And they think that they don't amount to anything if they're being normal citizens. If they're not leaders or something, then they have to prove themselves some other way. Maybe they could be you. Could it?
They're like trying to pin all this other shit on him.
I guess.
That he didn't do.
I tried to figure out what to say. He studied me. Dave, if you have anything at all to say about this affair that you haven't told us, I'd advise you to tell us now. It'll make things a lot easier if we decide to carry this further. Sergeant, I don't know what you want me to say, but all I can tell you is I didn't do it. It doesn't matter how bad it looks. He shrugged. All right. He looked at those papers again, and against you is the fact that you were caught in a phone booth with a box pried open and money all over the place. You had an automobile spring leaf in your hand. Your fingerprints were on that metal. They were also on the phone box. What about that?
In your face, you stupid fucking kid.
Dummy. In spite of myself, I began to sweat some. I put my hands on the box when they asked me to gather up all the money. Some of it was still in the box, and I couldn't help it. Did they mention that? He made a note. No, I'll verify it. Did you find any other prints on the spring leaf? Yes, but they aren't any good. Yours blurred them. Isn't that in my favor? He compressed his lips briefly. It could be. It could be also that you just picked up the hunk of steel somewhere, knowing that somebody else's prints would be on it. Sergeant, I said, trying to get through to him. If that's the case, then why would I be fool enough to use the thing barehanded? Why should I want to put my own prints on it? His answer was mild. It doesn't add up. Now, in your favor, your story about the boys were out with checks. We talked to them all, and you did just what you said. You did seem to be heading back across the park after you left the Burton kid out. And the car, doesn't that help? He nodded. The car, yes. We called the garage, and there was dirt in the needle valve, as you guessed. The officers who brought you in verified that it wouldn't start. All this, plus good character references, add up in your favor. The question is now, do these things weigh more than our finding you practically in the act? Man, they must be fucking bored at this police station.
Get a fucking life.
Right?
You're probably talking about like $75 in dimes.
Well, if this was in the 50s, maybe that was a lot of money. He said it was a 57 Chevy, so maybe late 50s, 60s. But Sergeant, I said, the phone company doesn't lose any money. All they have to do is fix the phone. It means a lot to me to keep my name clean. Why don't you give me the benefit of a doubt? His eyes became cold all of a sudden. The phone company helps to pay my good salary. The same as everybody else does. Any decisions? What's up?
It goes all the way to the top.
It goes all the way to the top. Any decisions I make had better be good ones, no matter who's involved. He just sat there and let me fidget. And finally, he spoke in a mild voice again. Let's talk about something else for a minute. Do you know a Joyce Reynolds? Some. I see her around school. She's a senior. I'm a junior. You see her last night? No. I hear she's missing. He looked directly at me again. Yes, you could have seen her. It was a flat statement, but it sounded almost accusing. He had me worried. She lives near Jack Burton, I said. Sure, but I didn't see her last night. He turned his attention to the tips of his fingers. What's she like? I don't know too much about her, except in a general way. About 5'4", real black hair, not built quite as much as some, but you might look twice. She's been studying with Herb Blackwood, but maybe that's over. I hear she was out with Tom Fisher last night. He said casually, I understand you're a little interested yourself. I got sort of hot. Jack Burton must have. Who says? Somebody. Well, you tell somebody that he doesn't know what he's talking about. Look, she's a senior, and senior girls hardly ever look at junior boys. Besides, she's going steady. Do you go steady? No. He considered his notes. You're what, 16?
No, you're so, no. You're so stupid. You're stupidness.
Going steady? What are you, 16? Then it may be understandable that you don't go steady. Run around with those three or four other boys. No girls? The way it was last night? Usually. But Joyce Reynolds, did you ever make any passes? I felt like squirming. But I didn't. Well, this is a weird conversation. But I sat still. She's about a year older than I am. Why should I? That's a whole year, dude.
She's basically 50.
Yeah. She's a senior. Why not? It seemed like a kid to her. Don't you get it? He shrugged. I didn't say she'd reciprocate, although she is not impossible either. I imagined that he could still tell that I was simmering, the way my voice must have sounded. Sergeant! Why are we beating in time to this? What's it got to do with the busted payphone? He was stiff-faced as he answered. They found Joyce Reynolds' body this morning, in the park, in the crevasse, under some big rocks, not too far from that phone booth where you'd picked you up. I couldn't say a thing.
Shit, this kid killed someone.
She did. She was strangled and beaten, he went on. Maybe somebody made a pass and got mad when he didn't get anywhere. Maybe it was somebody she looked at as sort of a kid. Maybe even she even laughed at him when he got serious. How about that? I finally found my voice. Me? First you say I wreck a payphone, then you say I killed Joyce Reynolds? What am I supposed to be, a one-man crime wave? It's not so crazy as you might think, boy. Me? Why me? I almost yelled. How do you know little Herb Blackwood wasn't hanging around waiting for her when Tom Fisher brought her home last night? How do you know that Tom even brought her home? How about Jack Burton? All the stuff you said about me and you could have said about him. And he lives close to his house. Her house. How do you know he didn't walk over to the park after I left him? What time was she killed anyway? Jensen looked away. This much I'll give you. We don't know yet.
In your face, kid.
We haven't even checked. And then all of a sudden he like writes it down in his little note. Check when she was killed.
Ask about the other guy.
Little asterisks right there, a little bullet point. Then he stared coldly at me. I'll tell you what I could have happened in your case. Not Fisher's, Blackwood's, or Burton's case. Yours. You pick up the girl and drive to the park. You make a pass, but you get nowhere. You get mad and slug her, and then you strangle her. You try to hide the body temporarily, anyway. Then you go to leave, and you can't start the car, and you begin to sweat. That car is close to the body. It can tie you to what you've done. So you decide to fake a smash on a payphone. Maybe you even hang around until you're sure of being picked up. This is to fix our attention on you for a minor offense instead of murder. Who'd be robbing a payphone if you just committed murder? A neat trick if somebody doesn't see through it. Now that the cases can be built against you, can you prove otherwise? My brain had been busy.
Pretty sure the burden's on the state, but okay.
My brain had been busy while he was piling things on. Sergeant, you better be thinking of those others. Listen, if I did what you said, where'd that spring leaf come from? The one that was used on the phone. How should I know? If I smashed that phone to draw attention away from Joyce, I'd have to get that hunk of steel in a hurry, wouldn't I? You know how clean to keep the park. Where'd that leaf come from? Out of the trunk of your car. Where else? I snorted. Are you kidding? You take a look in that trunk. The way Dad keeps it writ, you could eat off the floor. All that's in there is a spare tire, a jacket, a lug wrench. Chains in the winter. Not now. Jensen looked thoughtful. What kind of tires have you? Tubeless. Okay. With inner tubes, a lot of drivers used to carry a spring leaf to pry the thin tire off the rim if they fixed a flat themselves. That doesn't sound likely here. He shut up and thought. Then he said, all the same, I'm going to check with your dad about the spring leaf. In meantime, I guess we'd better have you tell me about Jack Burton. Pulled some papers over in front of him. Where shall I start? I asked, feeling easier. He didn't answer. He was staring at two papers lying next to each other. He studied one and then the other, and finally he looked up. You and Jack Burton run around with several other boys quite a bit. That's right. Sort of a gang? Well, I wouldn't call it that, Sergeant. You know how it sounds nowadays. Why do you always look on the bad side? I'll tell you why, Carrie. You don't drive your dad's car every night. I don't think that he'd let you. So if you keep the trunk so clean, the spring leaf wouldn't be in it all the time. Why not? You know, a spring leaf makes a pretty good jimmy, especially if its end's filed down. I'll have a look at it, your little toy, to see about that. Now, if your gang has been breaking and entering, you'd have a spring leaf with you on a certain nights, all right? And I pointed at the papers on the desk. I suppose it says so in there. He tapped them. Oh, no, it doesn't say a word about that. But one of them says that whoever tried to shove Joyce Reynolds' body under those rocks had to kneel to do it. And the other report has a note on it that your father was concerned about the dirt on your knees of your pants when they brought you in last night. He stood up suddenly. Now I wonder if we went out to your house and brought back those pants and went to the lab test, we'd find the same kind of dirt as on the rocks.
Oh, shit.
I couldn't say a thing. The pants hadn't gone to the cleaners, and I knew that where the dirt from the knees came from. The end.
Damn, that took a turn. I was not expecting that.
I was not seeing that at all. That was good.
Good.
Yeah.
Spooky
sheet, man.
And the guy's a psychopath. To just be like, whatever, we're just stealing fucking quarters and shit from paper.
And murdering that girl.
I wasn't murdering anybody. My car doesn't work, you stupid asshole.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. And I'm ready for sleep.
Yeah, now it's time to tuck in and go night night.
Thanks for listening to Spooky Sheet. Stay
sheety.
Sheet. Thank you.